previous the previous program was the Gary Noel Show, heard Monday through Friday at noon. It is now 1 p.m. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind coming up.
Hey everybody, Kev O'Donoghue and Julian Joiello.
Hey there, from the studio.
Back with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and some guests. Try and help you lead a more positively minded life. And we are back from the break, July 4th. I mean, it's what a difference a week makes.
Yeah, it does. It's important to have, especially in the summertime.
Yeah, and you could roll a bowling ball down Fifth Avenue on July 4th. Not today, though. We are back in full swing today. And if you missed the July 4th show, I recommend it to you. It was a great show. We did get a lot of feedback on the July 4th show. We did a kind of tribute to Armand, who has left us now for 2 years, by bringing his voice back on the air and talking about, you know, a central theme of his, which was getting in touch with the real you, getting in touch with the real self. Because after all, it was Independence Day, and here at The Positive Mind and as therapists, we try to get people to be more free and more independent, less dependent. And so we try to find out what things are preventing people from experiencing their real self.
Yeah, hopefully a lot of people over the holiday were able to take an introspective look at who they are and what they care about. And what they do to themselves.
Yeah. You see, that's what happens when people slow down. And then hopefully, you know, that's what you get to do when you take time off away from work.
Right.
And one of the ideas that, again, if you listen to the show, you'll hear that Armand recommended was to take time to do nothing. And on that show, Armand had a caller who said, "What does it look like to do nothing? You know, I'm always doing something." But, you know, you can do nothing. And you can practice doing nothing and see what comes up doing nothing. I tell you, it's a terrifying experience. Isn't it, Julian?
It can be overwhelming sometimes, which is ironic because nothing shouldn't be overwhelming. But it can be overwhelming because all of a sudden you deal with yourself, with your feelings, with your body, with your surroundings, instead of focusing into whatever thing you're always doing.
Yeah. And you're not distracted by your doings and really just experiencing yourself. And how often do we get a chance to do that?
It's rare. I think that's why baths are so important for relaxing. Baths.
Baths. Does anybody take a bath anymore? I mean,
I don't think many people do in New York City because the bathtub is the size of your sink. But but it is sort of a place. It's difficult to do things while you're in the bathtub because.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And imagine spending the whole day in there.
Yeah, what other things are kind of like that? I mean, probably the train used to be that way. Now they have service on the train, so everybody's on their phones.
Right. People are always doing
it. But I like to take a moment of the half hour of commute on the train to not use my phone and just sort of observe and sit.
Yeah, yeah. And you learn stuff that way? Or?
Well, absolutely. I mean, well, also, there's been several studies done on actual brain downtime like that, being on the train or being on a bus, being on, you know, in a car where you just aren't doing anything. And your memories, your short-term memories sort of solidify themselves during that time. It's kind of like categorizing time. Your brain files your memories away, the ones that are important, and throws away the ones that aren't.
Really?
And if you don't ever give yourself that time, things don't tend to sit in your brain. You don't really learn as well if you don't have that 30-minute, hour-long break. Well, you're not sleeping and you're not doing anything. It's just
right.
You're awake, but you're not really focusing on anything specific. Right. Your brain is allowed to do its own thing.
We recommend this doing nothing, not just on the train, but actually spend a whole day doing nothing.
Right.
A whole day. No screen, no book, no anything. Just sitting and doing nothing. You'll be surprised what comes up. And you'll be surprised that what you can find out about yourself by things that you aren't doing when you're not doing.
Yeah, you know, Armand had a friend named Dieter who ran a silent camp. It was a camp.
Yeah, in Italy. Yeah.
It was a camp of silence. You go for, like, I think 10 days, 12 days. Lochi Pochi, I think it was called.
Yeah, it was in Pochi. Pochi, Italy. It had
a funny name. And, right. And yeah, you go out there, you're not allowed to speak to anybody, and it's not about interacting without words. It's about just being alone and silent in nature.
Yeah.
And people come back, and they're like, my God, my life is different. I have this connection now with the world and with my own body, which is cool. And that's kind of the extreme version of what we're talking about. But
it is, but I think one of the experiences that could happen is you could die. You feel like you die when you're in silence
for 10 days. You feel like you could potentially die.
You feel like you could, yeah. So yeah. We recommend that show to you. It's on the archive. You can get the archive going to positivemindcenter.com and tuning into the archive there, or thepositivemind.com itself. And check out the July 4th show. It's about getting independent.
Yeah.
Which, you know, was apropos that day. Well, today we brought back a guest who we also got calls from a few weeks ago when we did a show on rumination.
Yeah.
Which is all about the past and not being in the present and kind of not knowing yourself, getting caught up in your own thinking. And that's a way to really disconnect from yourself. So we thought we'd bring Kent Robertshaw back with a different twist on this and being caught up in your own thinking. Kent, welcome back to WBAI.
Always a pleasure.
Kent is a board-certified psychiatrist, and he teaches at Columbia Medical School. And Kent, remind people about ruminating and what ruminating's all about.
Well, again, the show we did was about how getting what you're saying about being quiet and having nothing distracting you, being a human being instead of a human doing, being. A lot of people, it's very uncomfortable to not be doing things because when they're at a quiet place just being, their mind goes to past regrets and goes to their own personal history with a negative slant of what I did wrong or what I feel guilty about or how stupid I was to make the choices I did. And that's apropos of what you're saying about how hard it is to just sit quiet and not do something, because sadly, that's where a lot of people's minds go when they're not distracted by doing something or an addiction or a person in front of them. They go to history, past, in a negative way.
And I bet everybody out there could, if I asked right now, to list 10 things that you regret or 10 things that you review in your mind and ruminate about, people would come up with that list very, very quickly.
Geez, 10.
Right?
Well, how about? I mean, it's a lot, but I mean, it's like, yeah, it would come quickly. And that's the scary part, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a form of entertainment. You know, that's what I think it is. You know, and we get caught up in this ruminating because we don't see the future very clearly. And it's hard to get present now. But one thing we often do know, and that keeps us company, is the past. How destructive is this, Kent?
Well, again, I think a lot of depressive thoughts that people have is a constant sort of going over their past, of feeling that they've made mistakes, a feeling of shame, of lesser than, not living up to my potential because of bad or stupid or things that I've done in the past, or feelings of guilt, feelings like, oh, I should have got my wife a better gift on Mother's Day, or I should have been nicer to my grandmother while she was alive. It can go back yesterday to Kevin. I didn't say he has a cool shirt on when I saw him a half hour ago, to, you know, 20 years ago of things that I wish I had done different to people, which is more related to guilt. So guilt and shame has a lot to do with looking over one's past with a sense of I'm bad or wrong or never do the right thing.
Right. And it's sort of like I wish I could change that, but how you can't. I mean, you really, you physically cannot, because it is not now. And it gets difficult when you think about the past and the future, because these are both sort of unattainable places that are really inaccessible from the moment that we are in, which we are running from constantly.
And we talked about how merciless we can be with ourselves. And when we get into this negative spiral, this negative self-talk, this ruminating about things we didn't do right or didn't achieve, didn't accomplish, or things we did to other people, we can be pretty, pretty brutal with each other. But Kent, you came up with a solution.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea is you're trying to detach from what you're thinking about yourself and trying to do exercise of what would I say to Kevin or Julian or a friend or someone I care about if they told me they made the same mistake, that they didn't tell Kevin he had a cool black shirt on today, which he does have, or he didn't kiss his grandmother 20 years ago. What would you say to them? And if what you say to them is kind, reassuring, and most importantly, it's very human, you made a mistake, or you're less than perfect, or you're not benevolent, you know, you're not always selfless. If you say those kind things to other people, it really is interesting why we don't have that perspective to say the kind, reassuring words to ourselves about the past.
Mm-hmm. Right. Why do we find that we're more critical with ourselves over everyone else? Why does that happen to us?
Yeah. I think it's entertainment. That's what do you think, Julie?
Entertainment. Well,
it's a kind of way of keeping your mind occupied.
It's 50 Shades of Grey entertainment, if you think about it, because it's really, you know, harsh and causing one's pain.
Yeah.
So I agree, as provocative as it sounds, like, yes, it's like ripping at a scab or something like that. It's passing time, and you're perhaps at some level you're not conscious of getting a weird pleasure or feel like you deserve to have this harshness. You know, you must be, it's complicated. We don't understand how the 5 billion neurons work in our brain, but there's probably something about it that we get something out of being harder on ourselves than others. We talked about, you know, having harsh childhoods, that we've somehow internalized a harsh parent, that we can't help ourselves from doing that. And even darker would be, I deserve to be harsher on myself because I've always had this basic sense of bad or shame that I've felt since I'm 5 and 10 years old.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. And it does stem often from that internalized parent, like we were talking about.
Yeah, the negative parental interject.
Yeah, I mean, that when we made that list last week about the 5 characteristics that you think are bad of yourself, and then you kind of put your, if you didn't listen to this show, you make a list of 5 characteristics of
criticisms
of yourself, and then you put an M or an F next to it based on mother or father, which was the one that would have said this about you,
right?
And sort of realize which parent was internalized in yourself to push you to think that you're really clumsy, or that you're too clumsy, or that you're too depressed, or that you're too unfocused, and why have these things become extra critical on yourself and not your friend, who perhaps is a bit unfocused, but you go, you know, you just need a little bit of time off, and you say, oh, don't be so hard on yourself. You're going to get this together. You just need to focus a little bit more. It's not a big deal. Why can't you say that to yourself?
Why can't you?
Yeah.
Because mom and dad go deep. Yeah. And that critical, evaluative voice, you know, runs deeper than a friend's warm, reassuring voice.
Right.
Well, we wanted to transition today to something called negative future thinking. Ruminating is about the past and shining a spotlight on the past and things you've done. But if we're not ruminating about the past, we're often caught in the present worrying about the future.
Right. So there's worry and fear. There's just a constant feeling of negativity that something might happen soon that's bad. It feels like it's coming.
Right.
Right. Then there's pessimism. Right. I'm going through our examples here.
Negative future thinking.
Which is sort of a gloomy, depressive feeling that you're unhappy now and you'll always be unhappy and it's never going to change and that's just how life is.
Yeah.
For the future, always and forever.
Right.
And then there's avoiding taking risks. So you're afraid to take a risk because you're afraid what might happen, that it's going to go wrong, because risks are dangerous, and it's safer to not take risks. And so it's safer to stay inside. It's safer to hold on to the job that you don't like that much. It's safer to stay in a relationship that you don't enjoy, really. So these are a couple of examples. Yeah, and these are a couple of examples of ways we do sort of negatively think about our future, you know, and how we interact with it every day.
Yeah. And it begs the question, like, what for you people out there, what is your relationship to the future?
Right.
Do you take time, do you pause and look out into your future and, you know, adjust your behavior, adjust your focus now? By looking forward into the future, I bet most people don't.
I don't think most people do. I mean, my personal relationship with the future is it could be sometimes a little bit trepidatious when it comes to career stuff, because it requires risks, and it requires for me personally requires risks and practice and a lot of just luck.
Right.
But in a general sense, I personally feel quite excited for the future. The future sort of holds all these opportunity and all this. These people to meet and places to go and things to try and experiences. Personally, I mean, that's my, again, personal view, but I know a lot of people who do tend to hold on and say, there's nothing better. This is the oldest I'm going to be, and I'm just going to keep getting older and older, and it's going to keep getting worse and worse from here. You know, I miss high school because I was the, you know, football player. I was cool and was on the top of the list, you know.
Right.
And it's like, it's hard to look back and say, I peaked. Yeah. And then, and now it's downhill from here, and it's not going to go up. And it's like, how do we turn that into more focusing on who you are in the present and not really worrying so much about what the future holds?
Yeah. Yeah. So Kent, how do we handle this?
Well,
look at the future. Do you have people that come? I mean, like, are they talking about the future? What are they talking about with you?
All I could say to Julian is, that's very nice for you.
Well, he's a millennial.
That's very nice for you. That's from All About
It's
Eve.
Rare. It's not. I'm very lucky.
I mean, do you have friends that are very worried?
I have plenty. All my friends, I think.
Okay.
All I could tell you, the listening audience, is in my 20s, I was a nervous wreck. And years of therapy and spiritual and psychological, hopefully, growth and maturity and wisdom has made me less worried. But I can also, unfortunately, go into an imagination, right, which is what human beings separates us from the other animals. Our capacity to imagine things in the future has all the great discoveries and logical scientific insights and genius and creativity has to do with imagination about the future. Worry and fear really is about how imagination and your capacity to imagine into future is often with a very pessimistic, negative, fearful spin to it, where you're thinking that something is going to happen likely, about some worrisome thing that may or may not be in our control, and that secondarily, it's most likely going to happen, and it's going to be catastrophic. It's going to be overwhelmingly painful. And those kind of perspectives about the future means you're carrying around with you, you know, this director and screenwriter about tomorrow and next week and next month of like Nightmare on the Positive Mind or something, like some horrific spin of things are going to go bad and they're going to be unfixable and my life will be pain.
Well, I'm getting the first thing is that it's a good thing to be human. We have an imagination. So imagination is a really good thing. But I'm hearing the negative side of it, that a lot of people use their imagination to think the worst.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, you think about the manifestations of anxiety, right? Like, so anxiety and fear is triggering in us, you know, worry is about what we're thinking. Anxiety is, again, the physical symptoms of, you know, we all know palpitations and stress and worry.
Suffocation.
Shortness of breath, all the above. Yeah. And all of that comes about because it triggers the fight-flight response that we probably have from 10,000 years ago about the saber-toothed tiger that's outside of our cave. Again, we walk out of our cave 10,000 years ago, and we see a tiger, and it's fight, flight, adrenaline, cortisol, nervous system on edge, blood pressure, all the above. And it's adaptive to deal with those kinds of stressful situations.
Right, to give you the boost to get away.
Absolutely.
To find shelter.
Very adaptive. But all of that, God or Darwin put in all animals, including us, to deal with about 15 or 20 minutes of running out of the World Trade Center in 2001 or something, you know, whatever. It's very adaptive to deal with a real life being the operative word, stress or difficult situation that you either need to fight or you need to run away from. What's now true is with our imagination, we can just rekindle and bring out tapes and VCRs and, you know, horror flicks of our own imagination to then have that fight-flight response going on in our body based on our imagining bad things happening. Mm. Not real-life saber-toothed tigers, but saber-toothed tigers of our mind that we're imagining and conjuring up with our fear and anxieties.
Right. We've essentially tricked our brain into thinking that there's something dangerous outside for real, something we need to escape for real. And so our brain says, well, here's some cortisol, here's some adrenaline to get you going so you can go keep safe and you can heighten your senses and you can feel anxious because you need to move and you need the energy to move and get away from this. But it turns out it's just a fear of going into work the next day.
Mm-hmm. You're right. I wonder evolutionarily, like where we'll be in 5,000 years, if we'll need this fight flight syndrome, or, you know, our imaginations will no longer be anchored in anxiety, but we'll replace it with something else. I mean, because this is evolutionary. Anxiety is necessary. I mean, we need anxiety
to survive.
We need imagination to survive.
Well, it also gets to that the more anxious of you out there on listening in 2017, that in fact, you know, there is an idea that the more anxious caveman who was always kind of tentative and nervous and would always put a big stick outside their cave every time they walked out of their cave because they thought there could be a dangerous animal outside, the more nervous Woody Allen-esque caveman survived. Because so being anxious was adaptive once upon a time in an environment filled with unexpected dangers.
He owned all the caves.
and now
the most anxious cave dweller owned all the caves.
So then that gene or this this characteristic was passed down and selected, and these people survived, and now we're here in New York City and we're all in one place. but it's interesting. So what do you think that anxiety does for 2017 modern humans? What does that do for survival now? What does that do for our ability to succeed and survive?
I find anxiety is a really creative force, used properly, used well. I mean, it's a certain restlessness in your body.
Yeah.
You know, and it starts in the body. Anxiety begins in the body, and so you can't necessarily think clearly, and this is why it's good to have a friend. If you're merciless with yourself with a certain type of anxious thinking. But it gets a lot done.
It does.
Anxiety can create,
I mean, I know
opportunities
in the artistic community, myself, and most of my friends have most of my really talented friends have a high level anxiety. They're constantly worried, insecure, thinking about this, overthinking it, planning, changing. But they tend to work the hardest because they're sitting there saying, you know, I don't know if I'm doing this right, but I'm going to try every angle. I'm going to make sure I do every angle, make sure I research this, and make sure I work on this thing for 8 hours today instead of just 1 hour. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that we have this radio show to do, right? We get, you know, I do, I'm sure Kevin, a couple of days beforehand, a couple of weeks before, and it's in my mind a little bit. It's like, I don't want to make a fool of myself on radio, whether it's my grandiosity that I want to appear groovy on radio or because spiritually I want to help people, but I don't want to be a hack, right? I don't want to stumble on my words. So that kind of anxiety gets me to prepare a little bit for the show. So it's a very good kind of anxiety. But trust me, there is a lot of anxiety out there that's only causing 50 Shades of Grey punishing pain in people's lives.
Right, you're talking about masochistic pain, pain that people are sort of almost enjoying because it's just like, I want to have it hard.
Yeah, that it's, well, first thing, 95 studies would show that 95% of what Kevin and Julian and Kent Robertshaw have worried about in their life have not come to pass, period. Meaning that you have spent hours, days, maybe all told years of your life in a place of worry, not being in the present, not enjoying the present and getting joy from the present, but in your mind handicapping about a worry or fear that never happened. So that's a complete and colossal waste of your life right there.
Right,
and
it's the person who goes on vacation with their family, and for that entire week, they think about the speech they have to give the week after, and they just plan for it, and they worry about it, and they think about how they're not going to say it right. And that also often contributes to the failure of the thing they're going to do, too. It puts so much pressure on themselves instead of sort of just saying, you know what, I'm not going to worry about this because worrying about it does nothing right now. And instead, perhaps this relaxation time will legitimately contribute to my state of mind and my confidence, which would in turn benefit me when that time comes along. You know, it's really tough.
So is that the solution? It's kind of trust?
Well, I think...
Go on vacation and trust that you'll do okay with the speech a week from now. I mean...
Well, I think that, you know, anxiety, you know, falls into... Dare I say, the serenity prayer, which is, you know, accept the things I cannot change or the things that I have no control over,
right,
and things that I do have control over. So 95% of my anxieties are things about what Donald Trump's going to do as president and what ISIS is going to do and what whatever, you know, things that are completely out of my control, whether it's going to rain on our picnic on Saturday and it's now, you know, Tuesday.
Right.
So it's illogical to spend time worrying about things we have no control over that affects us. The other category, obviously, would be I'm worried about Thanksgiving dinner. And I haven't gone shopping for a turkey yet, and it's Wednesday afternoon. Well, that's a good worry. It's like, okay, that's motivating you to take an action or to study for that exam that you need to do well on or something like that. Or, you know, there's a certain anxiety about something you have control over. And trust me, sadly, there are lots of people out there that spend a lot of time anxious and worried about things they have no control over, and they stay stuck and passive in a victimhood sense over things they actually do have control over, and they're living the serenity prayer backwards, right? They're not living in a place of accepting, I have no control over something I'm worried about, so I need to not worry because it's illogical and wasting time.
So I kind of hear you saying like a CBT technique, cognitive behavioral technique, of interrupting the panic, interrupting the anxiety, interrupting the dysfunctional thought, and evaluating it. Is this going to be real? Is this really going to happen?
Wait, really quick. I mean, you were talking about, you know, when the cortisol comes in, the adrenaline hits. It does last 15 to 20 minutes once it hits you. So there's sort of a moment there where you have to say, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, you have to sit down and say, okay, this is what's happening hormonally right now. I'm feeling fear even though I'm safe at home and nothing's happening.
Right.
What do I do right now? Do I say, okay, this is just a hormonal response. This is just adrenaline.
Right. And just sort of step back a little bit and let your body calm down a little bit and don't do anything rash and obviously not obsess about what now I'm worried about and just gnaw on it like worry beads and not let it go.
Kent, we're going to take a break. I want to get to treatments and disorders and what kind of anxiety disorders are there. But I wonder if a good question to put out to people is, how do they deal with your anxiety about the future? Like, do you pause to take time to think about the future? Or are you, and let's be honest, are you like most of us, are just sort of making it up as you go along and, you know, conquering your worries daily as you can as a way of coping and handling it? Because the future can be a very scary scary thing.
So we're asking our callers who can call in at 212-757-5555 right after the break. How do you deal with your future worries? You're listening to The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, and we're going to play you a little bit of music by Solange. Stay tuned, and thank you for tuning in to 99.5 FM Positive Mind. Is our call-in number. 212-757-5555.
Sometimes I don't want to feel those metal eyes. Yeah, it's like cranes in the sky. Sometimes I don't want to feel those metal eyes. Tried to run it away. Thought in my head be feeling clearer. I traveled 70 states. Thought moving around make me feel better. I tried to let go my lover. Thought if I was alone then maybe I could recover. To write it away, I'll cry it away.
Don't you cry it, baby.
Away. Away. Away.
Away.
Away.
Away.
Away.
Away.
Away. But it's like I wanna feel those metal lines. Yeah, it's like cranes in the sky. Sometimes I don't wanna feel.
And that was Solange with Cranes in the Sky. She says, tried to keep myself busy, ran around in circles, think I made myself dizzy. Sometimes we do that, don't
that's
we?
That's one of the characteristics of acute anxiety, is a dizziness.
So Solange, if you're out there, you want to call us?
Right.
You're listening to The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, talking about future worries and anxiety and how to deal with that.
Yeah.
And we actually have someone on the line.
Let's hear it. Who is it? Hello? Hello, caller, are you there? Did we drop her?
Lena? No, I think we put her right through.
Hang on a sec. Well, let her call back. I don't hear her. Are you there, Lena?
Hello, Lena?
Nope.
I guess we lost
She'll
her.
Have to call back. She call us there. Right back, Lena. Okay. So, Kent, how much of this is organic? anxiety, worries about the future. I mean, if somebody comes to your office and says, you know, I can't stop thinking about the future. I can't, like, I'm building a bomb shelter in my backyard, or I'm thinking the worst is going to happen. I can't stop it. I've never been like this. You know, I've been fine up until now. And all of a sudden, this acute anxiety. Is it organic?
Well, I think it gets to the brain and the mind and, you know, the software, you know, or the tracks that are laid down in our childhood and our parents that you guys were talking about before, about internalized parents and our experiences growing up. And part of it is our brain, you know, our genetic brain in terms of neurochemistry and the different neurochemistries people get. So I would think for, you know, my job as a psychiatrist is to tease out about how much therapy, relaxation, spirituality, you know, biofeedback is helpful to deal with the software. And at times, unfortunately, people need medication because it does seem like they really have a phenomenal amount of genetic background of family members who have been very stressed and anxious and worried more than most people. And most likely there's something with their serotonin or their neurotransmitters that need to be corrected and balanced out.
And one telltale sign would be addiction. If you come from a family of addiction, chances are addiction was used as a way to quell your anxiety. So if your parents were, you know, alcoholic or something, and you aren't, but you have a high level of anxiety, chances are, you know, you might have inherited genetically something that they medicated away, and you are suffering with.
We have a caller
directly.
Here, actually. Oh. What's your name?
Hi, it's Lena. How are you guys doing
Lena.
Today?
Great.
Hey, Lena, how are you?
Oh, really great, really great. Once again, when I get a chance to tune in, your show is very timely today.
Tell us about it.
Now, first of all, you used the term future worries.
Yes.
Okay, what that is, you know, is as it's projecting. You're projecting. You're projecting disaster upon yourself.
Right, right.
Okay, so this is like a very tricky thing because the mind is so powerful. You will often, depending on the strength of your own projections, you can actually manifest these disasters in your life, right down to giving yourself cancer, okay?
I totally agree with that, Lena. I totally agree with that. Do you have how about yourself? I mean, tell us about you. I mean, you have a strong mind. We know that.
Yes, and I'm doing much better now.
Terrific.
But in the past, when I was really battling anxiety in a very big way, I've actually talked myself into a car accident. I've talked myself into a broken limb. I've talked myself. I mean. Hmm. Actually did these things and called them before they happened, you know.
Really?
And, you know, so it's the power of projection, not just how to avoid future worries. What I'm concerned about is, for other people, how I deal with it is... For a short time I was on medication.
Yeah.
Now I'm on completely natural supplementation, meditation, and prayer, and that has turned my life completely around.
Wonderful.
However, for people who don't think they have a problem, and will say things like, "Well, I can't pray," or "I don't meditate," "I'm too busy," "I can't do the," is there hope for people like that?
Is there? What would you say to them? I mean, be the friend to that person.
You're asking me?
Yeah, because we've talked about on the Ruminating show, and we talked about today on the Future Worry show, that the best ally, the best anecdote to this is to have a friend say to you, "Hey, you know, you don't have to be so hard on yourself. You've done great things in the past." So. Tell us something gentle you would say to somebody who says, "I can't meditate. I'm too busy."
I would say, okay, the best thing I could really say to them, just speaking from my own experience, is like, I could recommend a good book to them, which I've done. Eckhart Tolle has some, Eckhart Tolle, of Now.
Lena, let me interrupt you a second. Say it like you're saying it to them.
Okay. I do have a book that I think you could really get into. It's a very easy read. It's called The Power of Now. It's by this fellow Eckhart Tolle.
Okay, Lena, I want to interrupt you one more time because we're friends. You know I can do this with you.
Yes, I know you can.
I know. I want you to do it one more time, but I want you to do it a little more softly.
Oh, you want me not to be so forceful?
Yes.
Here's a book, sweetheart.
I love you.
I think it'll really turn you on.
Okay. What's the name of it?
It's called The Power of Now, baby.
Okay. All right, I'm hearing you differently when you soften it up a little bit. And that's kind of all that people need.
You're very right on the money with this.
Thank you.
Because I've been accused of being too pushy.
Listen, we are glad you tuned in. You love Kent Robertshaw, don't you?
Yeah, I love Dr. Robertshaw.
Okay, so call us back, Lynn. Call us next time he's on, okay?
Will do. Have a great day, you guys.
Thank you for your input. That's projection.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye.
We didn't talk about projection, but I mean, she does pick up the point that if you have a strong mind and a strong imagination, you can create this car accident for yourself. You can create this leg wound, this broken leg for yourself. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that what the body can do with chronic stress, with cortisol and adrenaline constantly, as if we're having saber-tooth tigers drunk bout at us and we're just worried about the stock market and mortgage rates and ridiculous stuff that we worry about in this first world country we live in, you know, that we can do a mess to our bodies. Our bodies aren't made to have the kind of chronic stress that people put themselves through and can cause heart disease. Okay, all the things she says is true, let alone symptoms that we mistake for bodily problems, and we go to doctors because we don't breathe very well and I feel dizzy and all the above, and they're symptoms of anxiety. I would argue that most people under 40 years old going to doctors are going for symptoms of anxiety that they mistake as their stomach, something's wrong. They have a nervous stomach, that their palpitations, I'm having a heart attack. No, you're having a panic attack. You're having anxiety. You're having shortness of breath. You're having swallowing difficulties. You're having a whole slew. I'm tired all the time, not because I have some rare Lou Gehrig's disease or hypothyroidism. Mm. It's because you're weighted down with worries on your back like a 2,000-pound gorilla.
And I've noticed like GP intakes are now asking people psychiatric questions, psychological questions. Are you anxious? Do you sleep well? How is your diet? What is your diet like? Do you eat late at night? I mean, kinds of things that were never on the intake in a doctor's office years ago. Because, yes, often it is just anxiety. Right. What's your anxiety level, 1 to 10?
And I think this gets to the famous book that Oprah talked about, The Secret. What she's talking about, again, if you're particularly things you don't have control over, like I said, the Serenity Prayer, if you choose to look at things in its most optimistic light, it is true. Studies would show that the power of positive thinking is you're less likely to have negative events occur.
Yeah. Hi, Marta. Are you there?
Hi.
Hi. It's so great to have you on air.
All right, great. Okay, so
the future is now. Here you go.
I have suffered from anxiety my whole life. Like, I remember getting ready for school or waking up a child and dreading school.
Yeah.
Dreading. And then it continued. Waking up, dreading work, going to the office. Oh, my gosh, dread. Hmm. Now I am an artist. I do what I want, blah, blah. I still wake up in dread. Hmm. I'll tell you how I deal with it.
Please, we want to know.
I let it settle. I let it settle. It just kind of fills me. And I say, okay, take a deep breath. Mm-hmm. Everything is fine for you. Everything is fine for you. You have a beautiful life. You should be. You are lucky, blessed, however you want to say it. And so I have to just pull through and get past that first step of like waking up and feeling the dread of the world and all the awful things that are happening.
Yeah.
Then I just go, okay, now I've got my life and I'll do everything possible to make my life beautiful and magical and those around me. That's how I do it.
You have a solution. You have a mantra that you use. How long does this last? Yes. How long does it last in the morning, your morning ritual of anxiety? How long does that last?
Oh, it's not very long. It's it's only like 5 minutes.
Wonderful. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. No, it's not very long, but it is
pretty intense.
It's real in the morning. Yes.
Yeah, pretty intense.
It's real.
Kent,
yeah.
What do you think?
Well, what's the danger? What's the danger? What are you worried about? What? Do you have an idea about what it is you're dreading about the day? What specifically
good question.
Are you worried about?
No. Marta?
Yeah. It's not, I'm worried that, I don't know if I could use the word worry. It's more of a, I think it might be more fear. This is a good question. Maybe it's not worry. Maybe it's just, it's a dreadful feeling that something bad could happen, that I've done something to hurt someone's feelings and then I have to deal with that, or that someone's hurt me and I have to deal with that. You know, it's like this whole, like, first 5 minutes of just like, whoa, I'm awake now and I'm alive and here I am doing this life thing. And I just have to like think about where I am and what's happened. And usually, of course, it's like, okay, yeah, no, nothing is wrong. Everything is fine. But, you know, sometimes there's those times when it's, you know, it is a difficult time in life, but it doesn't, like I said, it really doesn't matter what is happening. I wake up, there it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, again, if specifically, you know, sometimes the devils are in the details. Specifically, if you could get yourself to say, oh, I said something to Dr. Robert Shaw on the radio yesterday that he didn't like, and that's what you're dreading tomorrow, for example. And then, like, whatever that is, then what if somebody, one of your friends, called you up and said, I'm really worried about something, Marta. I'm worried that this doctor on the radio yesterday is upset with me and he's angry with me. If you're able to, again, be calming and reassuring to a friend that says identically to what you're worried about, then you're on the road to sort of recognizing that your worrying is spinning out of control, right? That your emotions mm-hmm. have hijacked your brain. And if you can start thinking about specifically what am I worried about, then you're on the road to be able to talk to yourself in, again, a very calming, reassuring, optimistic way to yourself in a way that it seems like at some level is not your set point. Mm. You know, for some reason, that's not where your brain chooses to wake up. It chooses to wake up with a feeling of fear and anxiety about the day ahead of you. Something bad's going to happen.
How about how about the night before, Marta? I wonder if like this mantra works for you 5 minutes into the anxiety. I wonder about the night before. Could you prepare for the day ahead?
I've never really tried that. I mean, I do go to bed grateful and just so so happy, you know.
Yeah,
just like, oh,
right.
I have this wonderful day, like, you know, I'm like, I have this wonderful family and oh my God, you know, all this stuff. And it's like, okay, and then, yeah, I mean, I've gone through my religious phase, so prayer would always work. Like prayer was really good. And I still do that. If it's, you know, I'll like say the Hail Mary, even though I'm not like religious anymore. And that helps. I just wish I didn't, you know, it would be incredible to wake up right. and not have well, that. It really was, and I, you know, it's something that it's just what I've dealt with.
Thank you so much for calling in, Martha, and thanks, sharing Martha. That with thank us. We're going to try to get one more caller, but thank you for sharing.
Great. Thank you. Sure. Bye.
Yeah, so there were so many places to go with her. She sounds like she has a lot of self-insight into herself.
I wonder if every morning she wakes up, something happens during the night where a hormonal shift mm-hmm. forces her to mm-hmm. feel some kind of dread in the morning.
Yeah.
I mean, just a physical hormone shift.
Well, I think a lot of people grow up in households at 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 years old where every day that thought that something bad is going to happen is not a neurotic one, that in fact their parents are going to fight or some sibling is going to pounce on them and bully them or something like that, which gets to one of the theories about how our childhood, where there's often trauma and unexpected, that's the key word, unexpected bad things happening, can set up the nervous system to have post-traumatic stress disorder so that you're always vigilant and fearful to be ready for the next bad thing to happen. With a 50% divorce rate, addiction, all of the above in our society, there are lots of children that are having tremendous amount of worry and anxiety that makes sense because they have no control over a very dysfunctional household.
Hey, we actually have Patricia on the line. Patricia, can you hear us?
Hello,
Patricia.
Yes, I can.
Hey there, you're on air right now, Patricia.
Can you turn down your radio?
Okay, I did. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. How are you today?
I'm okay. And how are you?
We're good. No future worries right now.
Everything just a couple of minutes.
Just a couple of minutes, Patricia. What can you add to this conversation for us?
Well, I agree with everything that's said. Prayer, meditation, both work. What works for me is journaling. I find that very cathartic.
Yeah. Tell us, do you discover things in your journaling? I mean, do you find yourself physically shift when you're journaling? Tell people the value of journaling.
I do. I get my anxieties and worries and concerns and fears on paper, and then I can look at it objectively. And once I'm able to look at it objectively, I have more clarity. I can see more clearly what it is that's probably I'm making up and probably what's real.
Right. And then also the journaling actually takes a certain amount of time. So there's actually a downtime period where you're focusing your energy into the journaling. So after 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes of journaling, you've actually had 30 minutes to sit in those feelings. And then you can look back at them now that you've written them down. That's really interesting.
What do you usually worry about, Patricia?
Well, just about everything. The economy, what's going on in the news, family stuff. I worry about people in my family who are not well, and I have no control of that, but, you know, I can't stop thinking about it.
Sure. Wow, what a resource, journaling. Nobody's called us with this recommendation. Kent, what can you say about journaling?
Again, I think that when you're forced to use other people, right? And again, what we talked about, rumination, about past. When you talk to somebody, you're forcing yourself to do just the beautiful thing you said. You're forcing yourself to think about what you feel. And that is very empowering. That's what Freud said. Freud said, where there's id, ego shall be, but not to talk psychobabble. It forces you to think about your feelings because our feelings can go into very primitive reptilian limbic system circuits. So just journaling or talking to another person. I always say to a lot of my patients, I don't need to say anything. The fact that you're talking to me, you're now listening to what you're thinking and feeling for the first time. Yeah. You're not just spinning around hijacked. And you can catch yourself over-catastrophizing.
Thank you so much for calling in, Patricia. We actually have to get going. We're at the end of our show.
Thanks,
so
Patricia.
Sorry. But thank you so much for calling in and sharing with
us. Thank you.
So there we cover it. We cover future worries, past ruminations, and it all gets down to living in the present.
It does. We talked about the past, and then we talked about the future, and now where are we right now?
And Armand used to say, the present... You finish it for me. The present
is a present.
Yes. And it's all about getting into the present. And, you know, our imaginations, our minds, our bodies can create these thoughts that make living in the present intolerable, really impossible. And so we go backwards or we project forwards. Thank you, Lena, for giving us that word projection. Thank you, all the callers. We didn't hear from any men today. I wonder, because anxiety must be a really tough conversation for men.
It is. It's a tough conversation even to start sometimes, right?
Yeah. It'd be an interesting question about men friends. What are you anxious about? Yeah. What do you worry about?
Think about that. Well, we'll be back with you tomorrow. We're actually reaching the end of our show here. It's 1:55 p.m. here in New York City on WBAI 99.5 FM. We're broadcasting from the Positive Mind Center in Midtown. You can call us at 212-757-4488. You can call the office. And you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Kent. It's been Dr. Kent Robertshaw.
Thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Kevin O'Donohue and myself, Julian Joiello. And you can always find our archives and more information about the center at thepositivemind.com and thepositivemindcenter.com. Here's a little bit of music, and take care. Do you know?